Hi, and welcome to Moves That Matter. I am your host, Dr. Clive Posey Jr. I'm excited, as usual, to have you here on this show, this internet show, this podcast, this Instagram show. We're delighted to have you because we address topics that most people are afraid to discuss. We go there. We're not trying to be judgmental, but we care about the intersectionality between theology, sociology, and politics. It is very important. Before we get into our next segment, I want to remind you about my book, More Than Icons and Images, Uncovering the Hidden Protest Narrative in the within the Black American Athlete. It's important that you get this book because it helps us stay tuned into the narrative that discusses Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, the whole shut up and dribble context, the Tommy Smith and John Carlos medal stand protests of 1968, October 16th, and why it still matters today. Get that book. And let me tell you this. Thank all of you for purchasing the book. When I get royalties from the book or they contact me, the surgeon buying the books, I appreciate it. You can get the book at Amazon.com. You can get the book at DrClydePosey.com. And also, you can get the book at Barnes & Noble. I'm thankful for the privilege of getting some information out to help America, as particularly my people. God bless your heart. We will be right back with our special guest. We had to do a part two because he has so much vital information. You don't want to miss my two special guests today. I'll be right back. Hi, we're back, and I cannot wait to get into this pointed and important conversation. The overall topic we've been discussing is seven reasons why racism still works in America. And one of the reasons that we're adding to our list today is because of its power within the education system. Racism's power within the education system, particularly in urban settings. And so we have with us today Mr. Eric Simmons and Mr. Jeffrey Cottrell. I want to turn to Mr. Simmons and help him to introduce our special guest again for this week so we can jump right into our topic. Mr. Simmons, hey, welcome, my brother.
Thank you very much. All right. Delighted to be here.
Glad to have you as usual.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce my friend, my brother, peacekeeper with the city of Indianapolis, Mr. Jeffrey Cottrell. I've been knowing Mr. Cottrell for 15 years or so. He's an outstanding young man that's for the upliftment of all people, but in particular, our people. Mr. Cottrell.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons, for inviting me on the program as well as Dr. Glad Clyde. Thank you for friend. Having me yes, here. Appreciate it. I am a fighter of our children. Mm-hmm. Especially African-American males, mm-hmm. Because I understand the challenges and the pitfalls that come with just everyday survival of making it.
That's important, and I've come to understand you a little better, I've come to understand that you have a more glaring reason why this work means so much to you. I want you to share with our audience, talk a little bit about your background and why, in your soul, this work means so much to you.
I came from a two-parent home. Didn't really have to worry about the struggles of everyday life, but I was curious. And that curiosity landed me in prison for 11-plus years. And so I understand how you have to rebuild your life. And when you look to the left and you look to the right, mm-hmm. everybody wants to question you.
Yeah.
But I've come to learn that through it all, there are a couple people that I keep with me called Grace and Mercy.
All right, my
yes,
brother.
Sir.
That helps me go out into the work, into the field, to let people know in this situation that there's an opportunity at the end of the rainbow if you just stay the course. And I believe that in our educational system is where we can make a huge impact on young males. Mm-hmm. However, it has been a failure, and I believe it keeps systematic racism in place.
Mm-hmm.
to help other people get rich off the backs of our children and their suffering.
Amen. 2012, Michelle Alexander wrote a book. You mentioned it. I've talked about the book several times. I included the book even in my dissertation. Mass incarceration and its effect, how it is not just big business, but I explained, I put a graphic up and with my producer on one of my initial shows, that mass incarceration and incarcerating the African American male is the most lucrative business in America.
And here's the reason why.
Okay.
When a young man goes to court or he goes to prison, mm-hmm. for acts, there are five people who stay employed,
mm-hmm.
because of one young man.
While you're talking, we're going to put this graphic up on the screen to kind of prove the words that you're saying.
You keep the prosecutor employed.
Mm-hmm.
You keep the correctional guard employed.
Mm-hmm.
You keep the warden employed. Then he goes and hires his son or his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
We keep them employed.
And the judge.
And the judge.
Right, that's right.
And so what happens off of our young men, people eat.
Mm-hmm.
And people eat.
Look at all those dollars histories that went into perpetuating sentences, which are now, as you will talk about a little bit later, turned over. Overturned.
That's right.
Dismissed. People exonerated, had their weapon, had their
the charges.
Charges,
yes.
Removed,
yeah.
Because they were wrong. So look at all these wrong, ill spent dollars that are being spent when it never should have occurred.
That's right.
And the reason why it shouldn't have occurred is because the place that our tax dollars go to, called the educational system, is supposed to help our children become a better them.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the inability, in a sense, to really provide an understanding to help especially young African-American males be uh-huh. successful in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
When I go out and speak to people, there are a couple staff development tips that I believe helps a kid stay in a classroom, and I like to share a couple of those with you.
Please do.
The first thing is, leave your junk at home. You're mad at your baby daddy and all of that, and it affects you in the classroom.
Mm.
Leave your junk at home.
That's right.
The next thing, spend quality time with your most challenging student.
That's right. That is why you're there.
Quality time with that challenging student. So you can find out why he's having such a difficult time in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Then, this is, I think, the biggest one. Share the power in your classroom. Don't always be the authoritative figure in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Spread the wealth. If you have a young person who you know is frustrated, or give him something to do in the classroom
right.
that takes his mind off the immediate subject
right.
that has him frustrated. Give him a little power in the classroom. That won't hurt a thing,
right.
because you're the ultimate in the classroom, but share the power a little bit, you know. And then the last thing, don't waste time on the system to give you help. Go out and get it yourself. Go out and figure. The power of the internet is amazing.
So you think that external research on the part of educators to help them deal with their class students would be beneficial. Outside research to help them do internal services.
Mm. But however, they wait on what's in place mm-hmm. in the system, which is often drug down, kick you out of school. I don't have time to keep dealing with you. So I'm going to kick you out of school.
But why is that? Let me ask the question mm-hmm. and I'll answer it as well. We ask, why is that? Because that's the good old American way.
Mm.
Has this country ever really advocated for people of color, for black
no.
men? Have
no.
they ever really? Is this something new to us?
Yeah, we have perpetually remained the huddled mass, still yearning to be free.
There you go.
That's right.
There you go. We know what's going on. This discussion we're having today is outstanding, and we could probably go 4 or 5 sessions and mm-hmm. not really get to where we need to be
mm-hmm.
so the audience can feel what we're feeling. But we're working on it. But at the end of the day, we got to do it. our young men are suffering. At some point, they have to have relief. If they don't, they're going to crawl in your window. They're going to crawl in your window. They're going to come and get what they need. Mm-hmm. They got to eat. So we got to help them. We got to help them. I'm an educator in terms of discipline, but what you're touching on is very important, and people need to hear that, man. People need to hear that.
I believe that if we would begin to force people to have a conversation about suspensions of black males.
How do we do that?
We go to the school board. We get a group of people together, and we ask for data to back things up. Because in today's world, you just can't have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
People need to see information.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. To back up what you're saying.
Sure.
That's right.
And statistical data will show that education, suspensions, prison. It will show a pipeline. On Wednesdays when I go into the jail for my current job and I talk to the brothers and encourage them, and the first thing they say to me is, man, if I hadn't been kicked out of school, I might have been a little bit better.
Okay. Mm.
If I hadn't been kicked out of school. This has been going on for eons. It's been going on forever. And so when they ask me, what do you feel about desegregation? I'm going to be frankly honest with you. I think it was the worst thing that ever happened to us, busing children out to another school. And the reason is simply this. When I was in school, my teacher went to my church. My teacher lived in the neighborhood. My teachers, they would see my mama in the store. And, Lord, I would hate for them to tell my mama I was acting
that up. Is the Southern culture that we grew up in.
That's yes, right. sir.
We got up north and desegregated. You know, I have some serious, I'm not going to take our show in a different direction, but I have some serious concepts about that. And I am, you know, and I humbly say this just to make this point. You know, a part of my PhD, the triple major of my PhD was Martin Luther King Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grappled with King, you know, on a high research level. I don't always agree that desegregation, that integration,
mm-hmm.
and putting us in settings with other cultures is the right thing to do always. It's not always the way to get us to the equality that we need.
No, it's not.
What we need is the same supplies mm-hmm. in our culture.
That's right.
The same access, the same pay for teachers in our culture. The same
that's
opportunity.
Right.
So I don't want to go in a different direction because we could get on that, but that's. That's because I was a product
mm-hmm.
of desegregation with Judge S.U. Dillon
mm-hmm.
In late 69 and yes, 70,
sir.
And it did not go well for me. Some of what, in the sense of the physicality of it. Now, the perpetuation of race, of the exposure to racism motivated me to pursue academics at a high level. But at 7 years old, for people to be spitting at me and throwing swinging bats at me and calling me nigga, and I'm asking my mama what's a nigga, what does that mean? Why are they calling me that? Because I want to play with these kids.
That's right.
So there's a whole lot to that, man. And racism and education
was, and see, I believe that was the start of the breakdown mm-hmm. of the family.
And the culture.
And the culture
we've been forced to move into from this book I have before me, The Color of Law. You put us in these cultures and then rip us out and put us into education systems that are foreign to the culture you forced us to live in.
Oh, my God.
And simply,
yes,
so because the school is way out, guess what we decided to do? We needed to move way out, mm-hmm. close to the school. And because we had to be close to the school, that meant that I had to work an extra 2 hours instead of working 8. I had to work 10 in order to be able to sustain the livelihood
to afford
where the school's at.
Come on,
and so
man.
What did that do? That took us out of the home. So instead of mother being home at 3 o'clock when you got out of school, she was now coming home, mother and father, at 5 or 6.
And more tired
and less interactive.
That's right.
And so what did we start doing? That's why the microwave became popular.
That's right.
The microwave became popular because our parents wasn't there.
That's right.
And so we had the microwave food. And so the microwave became popular, which helped our kids. Food hurts kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fast food, the microwavable food,
high carbs,
carb cars and
the
all
the dyes
that.
Which affect ADD levels.
All of that, sir.
The Kool-Aid, the dye, and the high carbs.
And the high carbs.
And then we label them as only ADD and give them Ritalin and put them in the corner.
That's right. And
shove them to the special ed program.
When
this is all a byproduct of a system.
Right. That we felt like
system.
Would benefit us. That had no benefit.
Right.
And so the effect.
Now, I'm not suggesting that all ADD is, because I'm going to do a show about it a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting all ADD or ADHD is a result of that. There are some chemical imbalances that come to that, and kids can overcome that. But the dominant diagnosis are born from this process you just explained.
Absolutely.
And I want to clarify that.
And let's be real about it. Not until crack cocaine came into our neighborhoods and affected our neighborhoods did our children start being ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So the chemical imbalance that you came from, that you talk about, is part of the crack cocaine epidemic, hurt our neighborhood again.
Oh, yes, my brother.
It's
amazing how we were told, just say no to that, but then two people died of vaping and Donald Trump outlawed vaping, period.
Period.
Period. Period. So those things... happened to hurt us, but again, I say that the educational system, in my belief, is the start of the breakdown of young black males because they can't compete. And when you can't compete, you don't feel confident, and that affects you in your everyday living.
Yes, and so, just to go back, you're powerful about in your speech here. Just to help my audience stay on point. So we're discussing again that one of the reasons that racism still works in America is because of its effect on the education system in urban settings.
Yes, sir.
That's it.
Its effect, and what we're talking about that point is the trunk of the tree. What we're discussing here are the branches that express the viability of that trunk. And that, which again is that the racism in urban settings and their relationship to education is tearing our children apart. And if you watch what the Trump administration is doing, Nancy DeVos is coming in and cutting more dollars.
She is.
Cutting more programs, creating more food deserts, more kids to school without breakfast. Making transportation more scarce, and before you know it, we will have literally no funding.
That's right,
for urban settings, which is another plan.
Which is
a whole other plan we have to talk about later.
Yes. It's all set up for our communities and our people to suffer.
Absolutely.
They don't want us just not to be educated; they want us to be annihilated. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
And so, Doc, here's my challenge.
Evidence to prove that.
Here's my challenge to the audience today.
Because I was just about to talk about solutions. Go ahead.
My challenge to the audience today is that we start having conversations about the suspension rate of African-American males. We have to dialogue about that. And the reason we need to dialogue about that is simply this. If we don't get them in that house, there's another house that they want to put them in. And once they get in that house, we lose all control. We have control right now because they still have a voice because they're still in the schoolhouse. But once they get to that other house, and I think Indiana has 13 of those houses, we have no voice. Mm. That is another lost soul. So that would be my challenge to the people, is to have conversations to find out why they're kicking young black males out of school at an alarming rate.
I'm going to end on that. Sometime as a pastor, I don't intend to end at a certain place, but the impact of a statement that I make on my audience will cause me to say, that's a place. Let's end on that.
All right.
Let's end on that.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to do something that I don't normally do. I'm going to make this conversation, this particular point, a series. Mm. If you'll come back, we'll get you both scheduled again to come back. We'll perpetuate this. Bless you, man.
Doc, I'm delighted to share about this mission in life.
We're going
to
see to it.
Thank you, my brother.
Bless you.
Yes, sir.
Let me say this as I conclude today. These brothers, both these brothers, have consented to be a part of an outreach, a ministry, not an organization that we're going to establish for the express purpose of addressing this condition of African American males in Indiana and in the Midwest. That's going to expand throughout the country, and we're not going to base it on grant dollars. We're going to base it on the heart of men who care about other men. Listen. I am your host, Dr. Clyde Posley Jr., and you've been watching Moves That Matter. In life, you are forced every day to make moves. You choose what moves you make. Why don't you, since you have to make moves, make your moves moves that matter? I'm your host, Dr. Clyde Posley. I will see you next week, Tuesday, 7:30. You don't want to miss where we're going. God bless you. I'll see you soon.